Hello, everybody, and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast for today. You were just listening to the first cut off of George Harrison's 1973 album, Living in the Material World. And today, that's the subject of today's show. And if you can believe it, it's been 40 years, is that right?
Yeah.
Because we're
40
getting,
years.
We're close. You know, that's getting a little close to home here age-wise. So it's...
Yes. Guess what year I was born in?
I'm guessing this is your year.
Yep, I will turn 40 this year. So
Wow. We
have a couple of 40-year anniversary shows we're going to do of some famous Beatle albums from 1973. So
it was a big year for Beatle solo albums, wasn't it?
Big year, and a lot of them working together a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there's a little Ringo on this album, a little bit. First, let's do, before we get into, and I'm very excited to talk about Living in the Material World. I had a great experience this week, re-listening to this and getting to know the album again. But let's do a little house cleaning. We wanted to talk a little bit about our Facebook page. I've Got a Beatles Podcast Facebook page. We've been getting a few more followers, and I've been posting a lot on it. News stories and things of that nature, but we recently got a nice email from somebody.
Yeah, so as Chris just mentioned, we've got the Facebook page as well as our original Podbean page, and it's actually pretty neat. I can see that we have listeners from really, literally all around the world, so we want to say hi to everybody in places like China and the Netherlands, England, Ireland, all over the place. Pretty exciting, and we really thank you for that. And we, as Chris mentioned, we just got a nice message from Neil, who's in Florida. And Neil says, love your podcast, just discovered it a couple of days ago and have been listening nonstop. And then he points out a noticeable omission from the instrumental solos episodes, in my opinion, Taxman, keep up the good work. And because this is a George Day, a George episode, we thought we'd read Neil's message, and I think we actually agree with him on that one, right? It's just we couldn't fit everything in.
Yeah, I think we just blew it. Like, he's right, and we're dunderheads.
I think so,
forgot
too.
A great solo in Taxman.
That
he's,
is.
He's right.
It is. You know, so thanks for that, Neil, and... anybody else who's listening, feel free to like us on Facebook and post, and we'll write you back. So any comments or questions or anything else?
Speaking of great solos, I think one of the first things I want to say about Living in the Material World is it's packed with some of the greatest George Harrison guitar work there is anywhere. It's
absolutely
just fantastic solos. And maybe none better than the song we just heard that starts out the album, Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth. Big hit song, and rightfully so. Fantastic song, great solo, great piano from Nicky Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
one of my favorites of him altogether. Great way to start an album.
It is. Let's give a little context to this album and that whole that song as well. So George just finished All Things Must Pass in 1970. That was his big triple album with all these songs that he could never get recorded with the Beatles. So that came out, big hit, My Sweet Lord, What Is Life, all the hits. Then he does the Bangladesh concert in 71, another big hit, big success. And so George is really successful at this point. On a big high, and then he starts recording Living in the Material World in late 1972, and it was released in May of 73, I believe, and it's a little bit different. I think it's pretty hard to follow up those two huge events, All Things Must Pass and Bangladesh Concert, but the musicianship that you mentioned here is just fantastic, and whereas on All Things Must Pass and in the Bangladesh concert, you had all these guitar players, like Eric Clapton was on it, and Jesse Ed Davis, and other people, Badfinger was on the concert. This album is only George. So if you want to hear George's guitar playing, this is the album to get.
The other thing I want to say contextually, too, was he had been working with Phil Spector. Phil Spector was all over All Things Must Pass.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about that in the All George episode. And he had continued sort of working with him in this 1972, and they had recorded actually one of the songs on this album, Try Some, Buy Some, as a Ronnie Spector song, released it as a Ronnie Spector song, and he intended, I think, to continue to use him, but Phil Spector's pretty erratic guy, as we as we all know. If anybody saw the Phil Spector movie, I'm sure that's not too far off base about how crazy he is.
No.
But with Al Pacino playing Phil Spector, pretty funny. Pretty funny HBO film that you can get now, I think, on Blu-ray. Mm. But anyway, at any rate, decision he made was to just do it himself, produce it himself, and kind of find a little bit of a more understated sound than the previous.
Yeah,
I'm thinking Wawa when I'm thinking like production. You know, probably had 50 tracks of production.
Unbelievable! I know. That's a really good point, because if you look at the people who play on this album, it's a very small list actually. So you've got, as I said, George plays guitar. You have Nicky Hopkins, as Chris mentioned, playing piano, and Gary Wright of Dreamweaver fame, Gary Wright. And on bass, you have probably the most famous, non-famous session guy, bass player of all time, Klaus Voormann. On drums, you've got Jim Keltner, who played on just about every George album, along with Ringo. And then on one song, Jim Gordon. And then finally, you've got Jim Horn on sax and flutes, who was on the Bangladesh concert. If you see the DVD, he's there all over the place. So,
and I think Leon Russell played on like Try Some, Buy Some.
Yeah,
Some, Buy Some was one of the earliest songs they recorded for this album. And Phil Spector was involved with that one.
Right.
But the rest of the album was, mostly just the people you mentioned. I also, in listening to it over and over and over again this week, a couple things. One, I noticed that even though he did want to strip it down quite a bit, that a lot of the Phil Spector tricks were kind of just still in his DNA.
Yep.
And so there's a couple times when there's a little bit of extra, like, I'm thinking Don't Let Me Wait Too Long, where there's the dum-dum.
Yeah, that's true. That kind of stuff. Yeah, it's there.
And that maybe it hurts a couple tunes.
Yeah.
Living in the Material World, particularly, might be a little too busy.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But we'll talk about the individual tracks here.
That's true, but as we said, the guitar playing is a big deal, and it's a specific type of guitar playing that you hear more than anywhere else, is this slide playing all over the place, slide guitar, which is notorious. If you're a guitar player, it's notoriously hard to play in tune. And George is so crisp on slide guitar. Almost every song has some slide on it, and really effective.
And even if it doesn't have slide on it, it has the instrumental breaks throughout the album are just brilliant. One other thing I wanted to mention was I had somehow in my iTunes goofed this album up and didn't, you know, sometimes if it doesn't have the right information, it doesn't put them in the right order. So on my iPod, when I re-listened to it, I was like, why does this album sound so weird and so off to me? And it just felt like maybe my feelings about it, because really, honestly, this album I hadn't listened to very much. It's not like Ram, that since I was a kid or something, I listened to over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I sort of like came to this late and kind of didn't really get into it. And then, so when I revisited it, I was like, oh, that's in the wrong place. I wasn't like that. I was like, why are these tracks all off? And it seemed to me it was like the same track, two or three of the same type sounding things. Well, anyway, then I realized, oh, my error. Oh, these are all in the wrong order. And I gotta say, the order that this album is in, the running order, is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very, very well done. Because I think a song like Sue Me, Sue You Blues, if it's not slotted where it is in the album, is just a stands out. All of the things about it that I particularly don't like stand out a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the running order of the album, it's just fine.
Yeah.
Even Living in the Material World, which I don't think is a great song, and I have a couple things to say about that. Right in the middle of the album, and it boosts. We've had a couple slower ones, and it kind of boosts up the energy real good. So I really like the running order of this album a whole lot.
Yeah, really good points, and it just gives a much better context for how this album's put together, I think. And we should say it was also popular. It doesn't get the notoriety now as much, but it actually was a number one album, and which was continuing George's success. But this is sort of, read the review of it online, and somebody said, this is kind of the last album where George tried for a long time. Or it seems like where everything was kind of working, and then the next one was Extra Texture and Dark Horse. Sort of flop for a while. But anyway, we're very excited, as you can tell, hopefully, to talk about this, and we're going to talk through each song on the album. And
yeah, one last note here before we get into the tracks. Rolling Stone's review of it at the time was so glowing. It said, at last it's here. A pop classic, a profoundly seductive record.
Ooh.
Well worth the 2.5 year wait. Happily, the album is not just a commercial event. It's the most concise, universally conceived work by a former Beatle since the Plastic Ono Band.
Wow.
So, pretty good review in Rolling Stone. Mixed review, mostly favorable reviews, but some mixed reviews. And some of the reasons why it got the mixed reviews, I'm sure we'll get into. And this, once again, is this will be the last thing I say about the overall album. I think some of the vocals on the album are weak in some places.
Hmm.
I think I can see, I can listen to this album, I can see like, oh yeah, it's getting a little more towards Dark Horse than it is towards... Where his voice was just terrible on Dark Horse,
or
as they call it.
H-O-A-R-S-E, yeah.
And the other thing is, there is, you know, a little bit of preachiness in this album. Some of the songs are, like, Gimme Love, Gimme Peace on Earth is a good example of a song that's a spiritual kind of song, but it's not, in any way, it's not like preachy, I don't think.
No.
It's just a personal spiritual feeling being conveyed to a public. Whereas other songs might sound a little bit like the, particularly the title, The Lord Loves the One.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we'll get into that, because that is one of the big features of the lyrics of this album, is it is very spiritually driven, and George was quite confessional on here, I think, more than he had been before, and you really get the spiritual side of him, and you can take that in a couple of ways. You can take it as being preachy, or you can take it as just being a very subdued, open kind of confession of his faith and what he thinks. He's just being sincere about who he is, and I don't know, it depends on how it hits you, but I definitely found that this album you have to work at a little bit more to appreciate it. And it's one of those you have to listen to a lot. And when you do, it starts to get into you. It's not immediately accessible, I would say. Even this first song.
I'd 100% agree.
Yeah.
It grew on me this week like no other album I can remember in a long time, you know?
Well, and that first single is a big one. That's you'll find that in all the George Greatest Hits. And that's Give Me Love, what we heard before. It's followed up by a very different kind of song, not about peace and love at all. Actually, it's about acrimony and griping and all of the bad feelings that were happening in the Beatles at the time. It's called Sue Me, Sue You Blues, and it's about all of the legal battles that the Beatles were having, because they were actually suing each other about Apple and all of the rights to their songs and such. So, I know you're not a big fan of this one. I like it, but I want to hear your thoughts first. So, or maybe we should hear a little bit. Why don't we play... Let's play a little bit of it.
And then we'll talk about it.
All right.
So the this was originally given to a guy, Jesse Ed Davis, to perform on his solo album, Ululu. I'm sure we'll get around to talking about Ululu, digging into all the aspects of some guy no one's ever heard second album. I find this song to be just kind of like too, like the clever side of yeah, maybe that's the word, just too clever, too tongue-in-cheek.
Snarky.
Yeah. And you know... I find it useful for, say, if you're going to do a segment on a radio show where you're talking to a lawyer, you know, it's a funny play in and play out of that. But
yeah.
And musically, it's just kind of like a little too repetitive, a little too irritating. One thing I like about it now that I've said things don't like about it, is there's like a minute at the end where they just play music.
Yeah, they kind of jam out at the end on that.
Yeah, so I kind of like that. But for me, it just is like, eh. It's always a skipper.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah. I
think you like it a lot better.
I do, right? Actually, yeah. I do like it. I think it's clever, but in a good way. And it's that impression of George as being the... sort of wry sense of humor, who's sort of, you know, looking over at things with a skeptical eye. And I actually think it's pretty good. I like the lyrics about, I like the chorus, like trying to, like pretending as if it's a square dance or something, the sue me, sue you, blues back and forth, you serve me and I'll serve you, swing your partners, I'll get screwed.
Have a bad time.
Yeah. I like the lyrics, and the slide guitar is terrific on there. It is maybe about 30 seconds too long, but I give it generally favorable marks because they were. Can you think of another Beatles song that a solo Beatles song where they actually talk about their legal battles or talk about what they were feeling at that time?
Well, it's funny. I was gonna mention that. I had heard someone else mention, maybe it's on a website or something, that it's a little bit similar in tone to How Do You Sleep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But less, much less visceral.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of like, maybe that's just why it doesn't sit well with me, is it reminds me all the nastiness of the Beatles breakup, like the nasty side, you know?
That's a really good comment. It does have the same feel of How Do You Sleep, actually. Same kind of beat and same sound in a lot of ways. So that's a good comparison, I think.
Once again, where it's placed in the album, it doesn't offend me as much as when I had it all mixed up. I was like, ugh, this thing.
Yeah.
It, like, really stood out as, like, not similar to some of the mood of the rest of the album, you know?
Yeah, and that the mood of the rest of the album is captured definitely in the next song, The Light That Has Lighted the World. And why don't we play a little of that to see what it sounds like, and then we'll discuss it. That song, to me, seems to be about his religious or spirituality and how he doesn't really care in the end if people agree with him or not. He's going to be who he is, and that's the path that he wants to take. And if people don't want to accept the change, then that's their own issue. At least that's how I read it. And that's, I don't know what you think of that or the song.
Well, first of all, I think that's a freaking fantastic message, huh?
Yeah.
Like, just be like, you know, hey, I believe in what I believe in, and I'm not here to please anyone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here to please myself, and I've found this path, and I really feel this way, and it, you know. So I think that's a great message, one. Two, a very, unlike some of the other tunes, very well sung.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful lyrics, beautiful singing, Nicky Hopkins piano playing through it, right off the bat, you know. And what stood out for me on this album more than anything else was the fantastic guitar solo in this song. Just a friggin' awesome guitar solo.
And some definitely recognizable drums from Richard Starkey. Certainly, I could see him in the back playing that beat. That's one of his classic beats. So, great tune all around. There are several, I'd say the majority of songs on this album are about that tempo. Sort of a medium to slow feel. And that's what I think you were saying. Eventually, by the end of the album, things start to sound a little bit the same.
Yeah, I think particularly when all the tracks were all mixed up for me, I found, like, oh, there's a lot of stuff on this that's kind of, like, serene, almost. Kind of calm and serene. A couple tracks we'll get to are very, very serene. But I would say there's a couple rockers, but for the most, I hate to eject Paul McGarvey into the conversation, but this next track, Don't Let Me Wait Too Long, is a good example of one of these medium medium, quick songs that, sort of the same sort of tempo. I really like this next song. Let's have a little listen to Don't Let Me Wait Too Long. Yeah, a very distinctively George song, particularly the chorus there where he gets into the vocalizing with himself type classic George move, you know. Classic, a lot of classic George moves in this one.
Oh, yeah.
This one, very, very influenced by Phil Spector production-wise, I think, particularly the dum-dum.
Yeah, and the echo, a lot of echo on that one, too.
Castanets from Jim Keltner.
Yep.
I think it's a highlight track of the album.
The review, one of the reviews I read said that was he should have released that as a single, that it would have been pretty popular. It's because it's poppy. It's got a catchy tune, catchy beat. And a cool chord progression, actually. It's capoed on the guitar up in F major, I believe, and he goes back and forth between F major and D flat major, which are not very closely, not common chords to go back and forth to, but it makes you, like, when we were looking at each other while we're listening to this, and that's when you kind of make your eyebrow go, interesting, yeah. Interesting progression there. And this whole album is filled with, as you said, really typical kinds of George musical tricks and sounds, and tricks in a good way, but his types of progressions, and this song has one of them in it. So
yeah, it's very a little bit similar. It just hit me when that chorus trick happens.
Yeah,
a little bit similar to Old Brown Shoe.
Yeah, that's true. It is like that. That's a good point.
But yeah, I really like that track. I think it's. Yeah. So far, I'm 3 for 4.
Yeah, so
you're 4 for 4.
I like it so far. Now the next tune, we've got two more that were on the original first side of the album, and this next one really slows things down a lot. It's called "Who Can See It," and
more like "Who Can Sleep It."
Chris is just
kidding,
smiling, laughing here. So. Let's listen to a bit of "Who Can See It."
I can see quite clearly.
Wow, there's some serious Phil Spector influence on that one too, actually. You got some horns and strings and a big production number there.
Orchestration, that's
Yes,
for
very much so.
sure.
So, who can see it? So, your thoughts on that one?
I think the very positive of it is the vocal performance on it is the most wide ranging, probably of the album. Really hit some of the high parts of his vocal range there. And we were joking before we got on the podcast about the sort of the whiny kind of yearning kind of like George that's like, oh no. It has a little bit of that in it, but I think it would work for me if it did. A little too simplistic lyrically and a little too long, probably. But other than that, I don't hate it. It's not a skipper. It's a let it play. It's a let it player more than a seek that one out.
There you go. That makes sense. I like that.
What's your take on it?
I listen to this one more for the music. The lyrics are okay. It is sort of, again, I think it's sort of a similar message to the previous, to Light Has Lighted the World. It's another one of, I've gone through all these trials and tribulations and had a lot of hard things happen to me, but I'm here for those who can see it, or those who can understand what I'm going through, or who want to go along with me. So the message again is pretty straightforward. Musically, it's very beautiful, pretty melody, and has those diminished chords in there too. So it's interesting musically and harmonically. So I like it. It is a little long. George has now a tendency to get some songs that are almost always around 4 minutes to 4.5 minutes, and that can push things a little bit. But I like this song. It's pretty. So I'll give it another thumbs up. I'm 5 for 5 right now. This is
Yeah, I'll give it a thumb sideways to up. So,
You got it.
the passing of recent passing of Roger Ebert is what
Yeah,
knocked
I
me
know.
to
There you
down.
go. Yeah.
Very sad, very sad.
Yeah.
So the next track is the title of the album, which is "Living in the Material World." Let's hear a little of that.
Okay, that's the title song off the album, "Living in the Material World." It's a very jam-packed song. There's a lot of things in it. It has a section that we didn't get to. We just stopped it before it happened. But there's a little quasi-Indian section in there. Yeah, you've got the sitar in there, and tabla played by Zakir Hussain. So you get a little bit of the Indian stuff. You have a couple of jokes in there, which George isn't, in his music, isn't known for always being the funniest guy, but a couple of references to his former bandmates that I know you're going to mention too, but I'll just read the lyrics because it's important here. Met them all here in the material world. John and Paul here in the material world. though we started out quite poor, we got Richie on a tour, referring to all three of his band members. And yeah. So it's kind of got some funny stuff in it. To me, it strikes me as a little bit awkward in some cases, the fact that the title is sung Living in the Material World. It's a little awkward phrase-wise when it's sung. It was obviously important to George because it became the name of his foundation, his charitable foundation. It was the name of the Martin Scorsese movie, and it talks about how he's sick of the material things in life, looking for the spiritual. So I think it's important. I don't know. It's a little bit awkward, I would say, to me.
I agree. I think that's almost the perfect way to describe it, because it's not like the sentiment's terrible or any of that. It's just the execution is not there for me. That material, the material, and it's like, is that the key he wants to be in? Like, seriously, because it's like a very strained kind of vocal.
Yeah, it is.
And oddly, you know, syncopated.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes into this, like, you've got enough of this spiritual stuff in the rest of the album. It seems shoehorned in here. From the spiritual sky, such memories, blue, blue, blue. You know, and then a hilarious moment of this song, late in the song, it goes, hope to get out of this place by the Lord Sri Krishna's grace. And then it goes, toot, 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 toot.
There's a flute.
It's like corny.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a parody.
It's almost like a sketch of itself, you know? It's like, so, and that other thing, we got Richie on the tour,
yeah.
Stuff is silly too. So just like, yeah, it's like all these different elements. The title is cool.
Yeah.
And making that the title of the album gives it a certain context. But I don't like the song. I kind of like some of the, like, I bet you it was better live.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it like kind of grinds a little bit, some of the rock at the beginning of it.
Yeah, it's the most.
Kind of like cranks it, but.
Yeah, it's the most rocking song on the album in terms of guitar playing. It's George's distorted sound. He rocks. He has a great solo at the end, too. Again, he's really.
Yeah.
The playing is terrific. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a grab bag of stuff. I guess we'll put it that way.
Grab bag, yeah. So I'm not.
We're kind of mixed on that one, I'd say. Check out that song so you can hear the flute at the end of it that Chris is talking about, because you will laugh too. It's pretty great. And I've always wondered, is this where Madonna got. Was she interested in that too? I don't know. Was she a material girl living in a material world?
I don't know that she was influenced by good musicians.
Yeah, that's a good point. Moving on.
I don't know who influenced Donna, but I
like
to give him a talking to.
I think it was George Harrison. So next up, the side two starts out with another spiritual song called The Lord Loves the One That Loves the Lord. So it's kind of a palindrome of some sort here. You've got the Lord loves and then loves Lord in there. And another one that's very religious. And so,
but why doesn't the love Lord the, like, just everybody?
True. I thought the Lord loved everybody.
I don't get the sentiment of this song. The Lord should just love everybody.
That's what I thought. I know. Well.
And that you should just love everybody.
Yeah.
And the end. But no, it's like, the Lord loves the one that loves the Lord.
Loves
otherwise,
the Lord only. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't quite get it.
Here's a bit of that one to get into it. Thank you. I don't know about you, but that when you first hear that song, it doesn't sound like it's going to be about what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it's more of a bluesy kind of tune. Like it's got a cool beat and bluesy seventh chords and stuff. Yeah, kind of guitar playing thing. So, and then he gets into the Lord sentiments. So, yeah. I like the music. Yeah.
Some of the music in this is pretty good, but I like it's a confusing message.
The aforementioned.
And it's like, the law says if you don't give, then you don't get loving. Like, really?
Yeah. Where is that?
Now, the Lord helps those that help themselves, and the law says whatever you do is going to get back, right back on you. So it's, I mean, I kind of, get what he's getting at, but why put it in? I think that's what you're saying is why put it in this song?
Yeah.
Why put it in this mix? It's sort of like a slinky boom bang, dude.
Yeah.
Going naps, drinking something else. That's what that song should be. But
yeah,
that
seems like a little mismatched or out of place or something.
Yeah.
But
sort of a funky lowdown groove.
It is. It is, yeah. But,
or, like, make sure you love the Lord.
That's right. So, I don't know. It's a little strange in that way. But
yeah,
it is certainly a lot funkier than the next song, which is very quiet. Starts out really quiet.
I think Be Here Now is one of the best, and it's really grown on me.
Beautiful.
Years. Yeah. So let's hear a little Be Here Now. That song's so serene and such a sort of meditation in a very Buddhist kind of way of let's be present, let's not worry about our past, let's not, you know, it's not like it was before. And,
yeah.
You know, and obviously, you know, he's got a history where it's like anybody wants to talk about is the Beatles, are the Beatles getting back together, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And this message to his critics, if that's why he wrote it, is a nice message to send. But this song is going to live on for years and years as a just beautiful view of life.
Yeah.
And he I like how it's recorded. I like the sort of Hindu kind of.
Yeah, it's got a very simple but yet powerful message, and the music of it is very simple, sparse.
Yeah.
But
drone.
That's what, yeah, that's there's the a drone
word
in the background,
I couldn't think
right?
of.
Yeah.
Like a nice drone, and you know, I love it. I think it's a fantastic song.
And he sings it really well too. So I think that's a very nice, it's a good place in the album, because you've got, it follows the Lord loves the one that loves the Lord, which is maybe a little too much in your face with spirituality, but then this one is much more sublime, and so it works well there.
We were talking before how had he released Don't Let Me Wait Too Long as a single, that would have been a hit. I think if Be Here Now was on a different album, where there weren't so many ballads, that it would really stand out as a fantastic song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might get a little mixed, lost to the mix here.
Yeah.
But to me, it's one of... particularly, I think there was a fantastic use of it in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So, thumbs way up for
definitely,
me.
Definitely. Great song. The next one we've already talked about a little bit, and that's the aforementioned Try Some, Buy Some, that is actually co-produced with Phil Spector. And you only have to listen to about 1 second to know that Phil Spector's on this one.
You know what I'd like to do?
Yeah.
Is do something slightly unusual. Let's play just a little bit of the Ronnie Spector Try Some by Some.
I'd like to hear that. Yeah.
Way back in time, someone said try some. I tried some, now buy some. I bought some. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
So it's like the exact same track, basically.
Wow.
And they just replaced Ronnie Spector with George singing, more or less.
Let's hear George do it now.
Way back in time, someone said try some. I tried some, now buy some. I bought some. Oh, oh, oh. After a while, when I tried,
so that was interesting to compare both versions, because you know what? They sound the same, don't they? Just different vocal track. One has a woman, one has a man on it. And that's about it.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mix is a little different, I think, but it's I definitely the same backing track.
Mm-hmm.
I like this song a lot, and part of it's because there's a David Bowie off his album Reality had a cover version of it that kind of helped jog it in my memory, and then I went back and listened to it. It's so good. This is when he's doing a sort of a pleading kind of vocal that he does really well.
Yeah.
In some of his work that I just really enjoy a lot. I think it's vocally one of his strongest tracks on the album.
Hmm. It to me it sounds like it could almost be on All Things Must Pass. It really has that same flavor, same sound, the big huge production, the strings, the chorus, the whole story. To me it leaves me a little flat. I don't know. I don't really get into it all that much. Maybe it's the lyrics, maybe way back in time, someone said, try some, I tried some, now buy some, I bought some, oh, 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 oh.
Well, I mean,
it's about the production, right? It's,
I think it's, and I can't remember another track in the history of rock that has so much sort of like circular, melodic, harmonic step.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it just goes on and on.
It's funny you say that, because in George's autobiography, I, Me, Mine, which you should definitely check out if you don't have it, he goes through each of his songs and has some comments on it. And about this one, he talks about the production and the Ronnie Spector stuff, but also says that he wrote it on the piano. And you can do things on the piano you can't do on a guitar, in terms of the way the notes can move. You have a bass line and all of that. So it's more musically complex, and he couldn't write it down. Actually, he had to have someone help him notate it, because it was so complex. So you're right about that circle. It really seems very circular in the music.
I just love all of the crazy, you know, chord changes and all that.
Oh, yeah. It certainly stands out, yeah. And then we got two more tunes on the album. The next one is called The Day the World Gets Round. And we'll check a little bit of that one out.
I don't love this song. I think it's maybe this is one too many slow songs on the album for me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like these songs that are when the world stops killing each other, we'll all be okay. Like, who are you talking to? Like, who exactly are you like singing this song to? You know?
Well, that's another one that if you read further into the lyrics, at first it doesn't sound like he's being very spiritual too much, but then it gets into at the end, but Lord, there are just a few who bow before you in silence, they pray. And so then he brings that in towards the end. But for this, I don't know.
I mean, the 12-string sounds good.
Yeah, I like the music.
And maybe this is once again, this is a very Phil Spector-y and very, it's sort of combining the Phil Spector-y stuff with the thing we talked about in the last song, sort of the mixed modality kind of odd chord changing kind of.
Yeah.
I'm making up new terms, odd chord changing.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. If I took a song off the album, it might be this one. Okay. Just to, and if I placed it on another album, it might improve it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it does. It's not a standout track, I guess I would say. The final track on the album has a very appropriate title. It's called "That Is All." So George, in his autobiography writing about it, he says, "There's not much I want to say about this song. That is all."
That's funny.
Yeah. So this is another. It's a closer. It's not a fast closer at all, as you'll hear as I play a little bit of it now. What do you think about that song as a closer?
It's probably the right choice for the closer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny the title kind of, well, tongue in cheek there, but I think that's it's an interesting song. I don't love the song. I think the vocally it's just sort of we called it whiny, and I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
But I find his songs interesting when, and I meant to mention this when we listened to Don't Let Me Wait Too Long, that when the lyrics could be construed one of two different ways. It could be a simple love song, or it could be him talking about, and I always think with him, he's talking about God again.
Yeah.
The
Lord. Right.
You know? And I think that this is a definitely one, an example of one of those. So
yeah.
That is all I want to do to get right next to you. That is all I'm living for, your love and nothing more.
You could read it both ways. That's true.
Yeah. So
interesting.
But I don't love the song, and I would definitely by this time I've probably moved on to something different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's appropriate for the title, and actually it fits in pretty well with the album. I would say the general mood and style and song. I like the middle of the song. It's nice when it picks up a little bit and gets moving. But for the most part, it's another one of the slow songs with a very classic Ringo Starr beat in the background. And that is all.
Yeah, so overall impressions of the album and maybe a rate.
Well, we should also mention that the reissue, this album's been released a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
Reissues. In 2006, they embarked on a remastering sequence for George's solo albums, and this came out. I don't have the remastered version, but from what reviews on Amazon say, it sounds great, so I'd be curious to hear it. But it also had two bonus tracks, and we're going to go out with one of them when we're done, but Miss Odell, about Chris Odell, who is an Apple staffer, and Deep Blue. It adds a little bit something to the album. It also means that it doesn't end on That Is All with a slow sound.
You know, I was thinking as I re-listened this week to this that it could use a remaster, and I am guessing that I should probably just go get the remastered, the 2006 remastered version.
Right.
But we might be due for another one soon. I don't know.
That's
you
true.
Know? You don't get burned on those things where you buy the CD and then get the now everything's, I assume they're going to do it with Beatles stuff too. Like immersion box sets, things where it's like seven discs of, you know, Dark Side of the Moon or whatever.
And where's the George Harrison box set that we've all been waiting for too, with all the outtakes and alternate versions and, you know,
we got early takes.
I guess that's a taste.
Is and it said early takes volume one.
It did say that. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that. This will be a volume two. I'm hoping. I'm really hoping that they get around to remastering this and maybe us hearing more live stuff from this and era, that kind of thing.
I think.
But anyway.
Yeah, I'd say overall, I'd say it's fairly underrated, and it's one that is often overlooked because of where we said it comes in George's career. But a lot to recommend, and I'd give it maybe a 7 out of 10 for that. What I have a docket for is there's a few too many slow songs, and the subject matter becomes a little repetitious after a while. But in terms of musicality, top-notch.
I think that's a great assessment. My original feelings on this was pretty much like maybe a 5.5. Was my original, and then I really dug into it and re-listened to all the tracks, and a lot of the tracks have gone way up in my mind. The piece as a whole, I think this is, you know, All Things Must Pass was throw everything at the wall that I've written in the last 8 years.
Yeah.
This was all new material, and it was all about, and sure, it might be a struggle that he had at the moment, that he moved on from, but I thought it was like a very focused on his feelings at the time of like struggling with being a rich, famous guy who also is a spiritual guy.
Yeah.
And that sentiment of that like really rises this up in my estimation. I think some of the production stuff I don't love, some of the particular songs I don't love, so that kind of lowers it down. But I would, after listening to it so much this week, put it 7.5, probably. All
right.
You know, not the best album in the world, but a lot higher on the scale than I thought I was going to place it.
Yeah. For,
to be honest, so I was like, ah, we're really doing that one. And then I started listening to it, and I'm like, thank goodness we talked about this one this week. You know?
Yeah. And that's a great thing about solo Beatles albums. I think they sometimes get a reputation of not being very good, but then you actually go back and dig in and you find they're better than you remember. You know, I think in some cases they're worse than you remember, which can happen.
I was gonna ask,
we haven't done our Do you think
we'll have that reaction when we do our off the ground episode?
Look forward to an off the ground
20th anniversary off the ground.
Paul McCartney's stellar 1993 album, that'll be coming in an upcoming episode, but yeah, we'll see. All right, we'll go out with the B-side of Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth, which is Miss Odell, and we'll catch you next time. Sure.